Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today, it's music in the virtual world. This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, a producer sitting in for John Schaefer. Later on today's show, the Afro-Venezuelan percussion ensemble El Agua performs live. But first, in the online virtual world, Second Life, you can do many things. Buy property, gamble, go to lectures, you can have sex, and you can attend concerts. Musical acts like Suzanne Vega and Regina Spektor have performed in Second Life. This month, the British Orchestra staged a symphonic concert there. So, what is this all about? And what's in it for us music fans? In a moment, we'll hear from one musician who's performed in Second Life and from a critic who's been following this trend. Joining us first, though, is Jesse Reiner, who works for Linden Lab, the company behind Second Life. Jesse, welcome to Soundcheck. Jesse, are you there? All right, well, we'll bring Jesse into the conversation in just a moment, but Jesse, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Sorry about that. We stumbled a little bit, but let's bring you in. And it's a little bit tough to talk about Second Life, Jesse, because it's a little bit hard for people to put their minds around it. How do you explain Second Life to people that haven't created alter egos known as avatars?
Second Life is a 3D virtual world, and it's a live experience where somebody who is interested in music and interested in performing can actually perform from their computer to a global live audience in Second Life. And this is done by sending a live music stream, which is generally somebody performing into a microphone into their computer. That then gets turned into a music stream, which can be plugged into virtual land in Second Life, much like a website. So if you take a URL from a music stream, you can plug that into your LAN in Second Life, and then people can experience a concert.
Okay, so but why do a concert online? Why would an artist want to do it, and what's the point of it?
Well, this is an opportunity to reach a large global audience that might not otherwise be able to hear your music. You can give a concert to an international audience without having to travel. The barriers to attendance are lowered for people to experience new genres. Things like the Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra is a great example, something that somebody in, let's say, the Oregon coast wouldn't necessarily have a chance to experience in such an engaging, very visual, virtual way. So this is a new thing.
How many people come to these concerts? How many people can come to them?
Well, it depends on the performance, but concerts can be attendees can be up to, let's say, 70 to 80 people can fit into what's called an island in Second Life, and then the concert could also be streamed across Second Life so that people in different locations throughout the virtual world can tune into the concert using a simple URL.
We're talking with Jesse Reiner from Linden Labs Community Development Team. Linden Labs is the company that developed the virtual reality world Second Life. Let's bring in Anne Majette into the conversation. She's a classical music critic who writes for the New York Times, and she wrote an article about classical music in Second Life. And maybe let's step back a little bit. Can you tell me a little bit about sort of the preparation that you had to go through to start doing this article about classical music in Second Life?
Well, one sentence that didn't make it into the final article was about how you could divide classical music people into two camps, those who think, how does music work on Second Life, and those who say, what? And for those who say, what, I did a lot of explaining about the Second Life experience. To go into Second Life, you have to log in, and then you were assigned an avatar. It's a person, and you can choose how that avatar looks. You choose a name, and you choose what it wears. And the Liverpool Philharmonic's presswoman and I were in some debate about what we were going to wear. And when I attended the Liverpool Philharmonic concert live, which was, I think, at 1:30 in the afternoon New York time, people had really dressed to the nines. There were some remarkable avatar outfits sitting in that audience.
I really have to ask, what did you end up wearing?
Well, I sort of defiantly wore jeans and I went bald because I rejected the rather oversexed presentation that many Second Life hair pieces that you can buy seem to emphasize.
Okay, well, and that sort of illustrates a good point about Second Life. I myself went online last night, and Second Life has been around for years, since 2003. But for the first time, I went online last night. I created an avatar, and it's kind of time consuming, but you can see why people get hooked on it, because you can create an alter ego. You can make yourself skinny if you're fat. You can make yourself have long hair if you have short hair or no hair. You can do all kinds of different things.
You
like
can
that.
Make yourself into a flying zebra. You can partake in the giant snail races, which are televised on Second Life TV. There are all kinds of strange applications. But one of the funny things that's been written about in the press quite a bit about Second Life is how the experience tends to replicate the real world, that everybody goes and gets virtual jobs and gets virtual stuff and gets virtual clothing. And I was very struck by the concert experience, which tried to replicate the real experience of the Liverpool Philharmonic as closely as it could, how much it adhered to the norms of concert going and how that was what people really wanted.
Okay, so explain, how did it replicate that experience? What was similar about it?
Well, the Liverpool Philharmonic had somebody build a virtual replica of their concert hall in Second Life. And as Jesse mentioned, you can only have a certain number of avatars in one space on Second Life. Otherwise, the system becomes clogged. And Liverpool built their hall over two islands to be able to have more people. So your avatar could walk into the lobby of the hall and go up the stairs into the auditorium. And then at intermission, we all went up to the bar and had virtual drinks and got free drinks very nicely. Of course, you can't really drink them, but you're holding them in your hand.
And it should be said, there's a currency within Second Life, Linden dollars. That is, you buy Linden dollars with real American dollars, or whatever currency you're using, and you spend that money like a real currency inside the world.
That's absolutely true.
How good was the concert? What did you talk about when you were at the bar?
Well, at the bar, I encountered a lot of other music people, for one thing. I met somebody from the Chicago Symphony who had come in to visit. But it was very difficult for me to hear the concert. My computer speakers evidently didn't live up to what other people's did, because other people I spoke to did not have that problem. I had such trouble hearing it that when my husband came in during the new piece, my husband being the critic and composer Greg Sando, who's a rather sophisticated listener of classical music, he came in as I was sitting at my computer watching this virtual thing, and he said, "Are they tuning up, or is that the piece?" And I said, "I think that's my speakers," because normally he can tell the difference between a piece and a tuning orchestra.
We're talking with Anne Majette, a classical music critic for the New York Times, about music in the virtual reality world, Second Life. Let's go back to Jesse Reiner of Linden Labs, the company that developed Second Life. Jesse, you know, we've been talking with Anne about classical music in Second Life, but and she mentioned some things about sound quality. What can people that create avatars look forward to in terms of replication of the real experience?
In terms of sound quality,
in terms of the same kind of things that we enjoy when we go out to see live music in a real venue, how do you try and keep those close in Second Life?
Well, you know, there's actually the opportunity for a higher fidelity for, let's say, a singer-songwriter, because what they're doing is they have much more control over their environment. You're not in a loud bar at the mercy of a sound guy. You don't have a lot of noise going on necessarily. You can perform straight from the comfort of your home into your computer, and then that quality tends to be MP3 sound quality or better, and that's then streamed into Parcels in Second Life for people to enjoy.
How popular is music within Second Life? There's all these things you can do. You can buy real estate. You can meet people. You can engage in some hanky-panky. Where does music rank in terms of popularity?
Music is actually one of our most popular activities. I'd say it on any week on average, there's about 600 live music events going on, and that spans the gamut from DJs to singer-songwriters to orchestras. So you've got a pretty wide selection of music for people to enjoy, and it's a Second Life is ultimately a social environment, and people love live music. They love to get together. They love to socialize, and this presents them a great opportunity to do that.
We've been talking with Jesse Reiner of Linden Labs and Anne Majette of the New York Times about the virtual reality world Second Life. Another artist who has performed in Second Life is New York's own Suzanne Vega. Here's how she described it to us when she was on Soundcheck this past summer.
I performed last year as my avatar. It was a little awkward, you know. I mean, I was doing a real performance. I was in a radio studio actually singing into a microphone, which was being broadcast, and playing the guitar. So I had to have someone else sort of operating the avatar while I was singing. But it was a real performance, and there were real people listening to the broadcast, but with their avatars in the room with me, in the cyber room, the cyber theater that we were in.
So that's singer-songwriter Suzanne Vega on Soundcheck this past summer, talking about her experience performing in Second Life. Now, if you've got some thoughts on Second Life and you want to share them with Soundcheck, you can feel free to go to the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org, leave a comment and let us know. Are you a part of Second Life? Have you seen music there, and what do you think of it? That's at the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Jesse Reiner from Linden Labs, let's go back to you. How many people are we talking about? How many people have avatars on Second Life?
Well, at any given time, there are between 40,000 and 50,000 people logged in and online. In the last 30 days, nearly 1 million people have logged in, and then we have about 560,000 active users last month, which means people who have spent at least an hour in Second Life. And our numbers have grown from 500,000 a year ago to nearly 10 million today of people who have signed up for an account.
And of all these events that are going on, one of them was Regina Spektor's CD launch party. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, what Warner Brothers Records did is they built a virtual loft to host a Regina Spektor's listening party for her new record, and that gave fans an opportunity to experience an immersive environment that kind of gave them a sense of the artist's sensibilities and aesthetics in the context of a very social space, and they could hang out with other fans, exchange messages, and talk about music. And it was a very interesting approach to music promotion.
How does the loft compare to New York lofts in terms of price? Yeah. You could pay several million dollars for that loft here in Manhattan. What would you pay for it in Second Life?
Well, that depends on the cost. It could be done for free if you're crafty enough. And it's you know, the fidelity of the reproduction was pretty impressive, I have to say.
Spoken like a true New York real estate agent. If you want to see a video link of the loft that we're talking about, that was from Regina Spektor's CD launch party on Second Life, you can go to the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Here is Regina Spektor and her track Fidelity on Soundcheck.
Just 1 foot on the ground, and by protecting my heart truly, I got lost in the sounds I hear in my mind. All of these voices I hear in my mind, all of these words I hear in my mind, all of this music, and it breaks my heart. When it breaks my heart, suppose I never ever met you, suppose we never fell in love, suppose I never ever let you kiss me so sweet and so soft.
That's Regina Spektor and her track Fidelity, one of the songs that's on her new CD that was the subject of a launch party on Second Life. We've been talking with Jesse Reiner from Linden Labs, the company that developed Second Life, and also Anne Majette, classical music critic for the New York Times. She wrote about classical music and Second Life. Like any new internet thing that becomes popular and begins to make money, and sex has something to do with it. The ability that people create these avatars from themselves that, let's say, might be free of the usual things that might encumber people in public situations means that there's more than a little hanky-panky on Second Life. How does that play into the marketing of music or how people consume music on Second Life?
Well, the truism about Second Life seems to have become that it's about shopping and sex, which is a lot of what the internet is about, too. I mean, people don't behave any differently on Second Life than anywhere else. It's just that you were able with your avatar to have sex on a public street corner and people will just sort of walk by you. But I think people experiment a lot with the freedom they have with their avatars. Universal Classics has gone very big into Second Life and has built a whole facility there. And Lang Lang, the pianist, actually gave a concert there in April. And they had to have a careful security installation around the avatar of Lang Lang to keep people from coming up and harassing him, because there are none of the regular limitations to a concert performer, and you can't have security guards standing there. They had to put some sort of virtual wall around him.
He's sort of a controversial pianist, so he had to have, like, virtual bodyguards?
It wasn't just because he's controversial. I think it was an impulse that anybody with the avatar. When I went to this Liverpool Philharmonic concert online, there were people at the front flying around the stage, and people... There was a streaker at one point who sat on somebody's head. I mean, these things happen.
All right. And we've been talking with Amy Jett, classical music critic for the New York Times. Jesse Reiner from Linden Labs, over to you really quickly. How important was the sex factor in creating Second Life in the first place? It's become a big part of it and part of some of the other parts of Second Life. How important was it from the start?
Well, I don't think it's something that was necessarily built into the software, but this is something about giving people a level of freedom and also giving them control over their experience. I'd like to emphasize that at events like this, we have very basic controls built into the property so that somebody can prevent instances of harassment on your land, or there's all kinds of systems in place. So events can be invite only. There are ways to inject unruly attendees and things like that. So the amount of freedom and, let's say, chaos that you invite into your experience is pretty much up to you, and we give you the tools to be able to manage that.
That's Jesse Reiner from Linden Labs, the company that developed Second Life. We've also been speaking with Anne Majette. Now, coming up next on the show, we're going to continue talking about Second Life. We'll speak with a singer-songwriter named Jonathan Colton. He's performed in Second Life. We'll find out if he needs virtual bodyguards when he performed in that virtual world. And a little bit later, music by this group, the Afro-Venezuelan percussion ensemble El Agua. This is Soundcheck.
Code monkey, get up, get coffee. Code monkey, go to job. Code monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say code monkey, very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do code monkey think? Code monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login.
This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, sitting in for John Schaefer. We're talking today about music and the online virtual world called Second Life. With us is classical music critic Anne Majette, Jesse Reiner, who works for Linden Labs, the company behind Second Life, and joining us now is Jonathan Colter, a singer-songwriter. Jonathan Colton, excuse me. He's a singer-songwriter and a former computer programmer here in New York who has performed on Second Life. Jonathan, when you decided to perform on Second Life, why did you do it?
You know, I was aware of Second Life, and it was something that occurred to me at some point. I said, "Oh gosh, I wonder if you could do a concert in Second Life." And of course, by the time I had thought of it, countless other musicians were already doing it. I decided to sort of jump in and give it a shot. It seemed like an interesting thing to try out.
All right, and how was it?
It was weird. I have to say, you know, it was very different from doing an actual live performance. I mean, there's a huge delay between the time you play and the time everybody hears you. So one of the big problems I had was I would finish playing a song and I would watch the audience and nothing would happen.
Now,
you know, and then 15 seconds into the next song, they would start typing applause into their chat windows, you know, so.
Okay, and so when they were they applauding Jonathan or were they applauding your avatar?
Well, my avatar is named Jonathan Colcliffe, which is relatively similar to my name, and I took great pains to make that avatar look exactly like me as possible.
Really?
Yeah. I actually had a sort of an image team, a production team, who took me shopping for clothes and the right hair, and I have a beard, which is, it's harder than you would think to find proper beards
to
in Second
a beard,
Life.
To yeah. buy a beard.
Yeah.
How much did you spend, let's say, just on the clothes and the beard?
I think they gave me. They must have given me $500 or $1,000 Linden dollars, and I think I spent all of it on the hair and the shirt. You know.
Okay, and so this is not money. This is not money that came out of your pocket and converted into Linden dollars. You got it from somewhere.
Yes, I think it ultimately converted to, you know, a few American dollars.
Okay. All right. And the entire performance itself, there must have been a price tag associated with that. Do you have any idea of how much that cost?
To actually mount the show?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't. It was actually sponsored by Popular Science Magazine and Creative Commons, so I don't know what they paid for it, but I think certainly there was some money behind it, because as I say, there was a group of people whose you know, job it was to make the show run smoothly and to make sure I knew how to walk around and and that sort of thing.
And as someone that just started an avatar last night, walking around is not as easy as it might be. It's actually similar to how real humans develop. It's a somewhat time-consuming process. You spend actually a couple of hours just learning how to move around within the world.
The first concert I went to, I couldn't figure out how to sit down.
And
somebody had to teach me finally.
And Anne Majette, a classical music critic of the New York Times, was that a little embarrassing to be standing at a show?
Well, when there are people flying around above your head, it's not so bad.
So, Jonathan, after you've performed just once in Second Life, have you performed a second time?
Yeah, I did. I've been in Second Life two times. I've done two shows.
Why did you do it a second time? Why did you go back?
You know, I really did enjoy it. One of the great things about it is that people can express themselves in ways that they couldn't otherwise at a live show, or maybe I wouldn't prefer them to express themselves this way. You know, I have a song about zombies, and when I did that song, there were a bunch of plants in the audience who had zombie costumes who came up on stage and attacked me while I played the song.
Okay, so this is actually not the only time I've heard it. There's a lot of pranking that goes on at shows, it sounds like. Anne was talking a little bit earlier with Long Long and things that might happen to him. It sounds like that's...
Absolutely.
Is that really an important part of the live music experience in Second Life?
Not by design, I think, but certainly the people who got me ready for the show said to me, yeah, you should expect that people are going to mess with you. That's sort of a part of Second Life, and everybody there is used to it.
We're talking with the singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton about his experience performing in Second Life. Let's go back to Anne Majette, classical music critic of the New York Times. And musical tastes in Second Life, where in the classical realm, where do they fall? Are people more adventurous with what they want to hear, or do they go to the old standbys?
Well, there's a wide spectrum out there, as Jonathan said earlier, and I think that people assume that Second Life's going to be very cutting edge, and there's certainly an avatar orchestra on Second Life that's extremely experimental. But in terms of the orchestra performances on there, I was intrigued. The Liverpool Philharmonic is the third orchestra that's played on Second Life, and the second orchestra to play on Second Life was Red, an orchestra which is based in Cleveland. And Red spent a lot of time and money. They estimated it would have cost them about $200,000 had they not gotten most of their work pro bono to put on, in essence, a high-quality television broadcast that was then streamed on video to Second Life. And Liverpool, by contrast, spent about £7,000, about $15,000, and they built this expensive virtual hall, but that didn't cost much real money, and they just had a single camera. It was a very low-tech presentation, and Red said, for Second Life, we have to have something very high-tech and sophisticated, and Liverpool Philharmonic just put all the effort into making the hall look realistic, and people seemed to be much more excited about the Liverpool concert. In other words, the video and the audio were not of such concern to them is just the fact that they got to go to a concert hall and sit in the bar and have drinks. That was having the whole experience of classical music and not focus so much on what was happening on stage. And I also noticed Liverpool did a couple of world premieres, which you'd think Second Life cutting-edge music. And the things people were typing about the new music was as unsophisticated as you'd find anywhere. People much preferred the Ravel.
Let's hear a section of Ravel. This is soprano Kate Royal singing Vocalie en forma de habanera. You're listening to Soundcheck. Music by Ravel, performed by the soprano Kate Royal here on Soundcheck. We're talking today about the musical life inside the virtual reality world known as Second Life. We've been speaking with Anne Majette of the New York Times and also the singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton, who's performed there. Let's bring back Jesse Reiner from Linden Labs Community Development Team. They're the company that helped bring us Second Life about 4 years ago. Jesse, can musicians really make money inside Second Life?
Yeah, there are all kinds of ways that musicians can accept payment in Second Life. Gratuity culture is very big. People tip very generously. There are ways that artists can promote their music in Second Life. You can link to the web if you want to sell your CD in Second Life. You can offer up a link to your website from within the virtual world. There are musicians who make pretty decent money at performances across Second Life. I'm not going to exaggerate and tell you that it's you can quit your day job and jump into the virtual world, but I think in the near future that may be a possibility.
You know, Wired magazine wrote an article earlier this year called How Madison Avenue is Wasting Millions on a Deserted Second Life, talking about how, you know, corporations have seen how people have come to Second Life and what they do there. How do you respond to that in terms of the corporate involvement of in Second Life, and does that pose any danger to what people have grown to love about it?
I think the most important thing is to engage with the community and treat this as a long-term project, not a short-term throw a big event and then leave kind of experience. I think it's really important for corporations and brands to look at ways to engage with the community, build a lasting presence, leverage the best parts of the technology that work for their business, and kind of treat this as more of a it's really a new medium. It has its growing pains like any other. Going back to the web in the early 90s, this is a long road ahead, and it's something that people, I think, should keep looking at seriously for the next couple of years, because I think virtual worlds are going to be huge.
That's Jesse Reiner of Linden Labs Community Development Team. Anne Majette of the New York Times, over to you for one last question. Does Second Life bring classical music to a wider audience?
Well, certainly people in the Liverpool concert were excited that they got to go to something they wouldn't normally get to go to. And also a potential for Second Life for music, which it doesn't have for, say, dance. When you're watching a dance performance in Second Life, you're watching a bunch of avatars running around, and it's kind of like a comic book. Whereas when you're listening to music, you're actually hearing the live music. You may be watching an avatar. His hands may be going through the piano keyboard, but the music you're hearing is genuine music. So of all the arts, it seems that music might have more potential on Second Life than other forms.
And Jonathan Colton, do you agree with that?
Absolutely, yeah. The greatest thing about doing shows in Second Life was that it really felt like a glimpse of the future, and with a couple of tweaks, it would just be a very powerful way for musicians to reach audiences, I think.
We've been speaking about Second Life with Jonathan Colton, the singer-songwriter, also Jesse Reiner of Linden Labs, and Anne Majette, a classical music critic for the New York Times. To all of you, thanks so much for being on Soundcheck today.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Still to come on the show, Elegua, the troupe of Afro-Venezuelan women drummers, performs a repertoire from Venezuelan folklore. And Monday on the show, early music, it's more than just Gregorian chanting. We'll hear why New York is a growing center of music from the medieval and Baroque eras. This is Soundcheck. Side.